Lord, one man is Elijah Deer, minister of the 12th Hour Apostolic Sabbatarian Congregation, Mount Zion, the 12th Hour, and up here in Texas. Today is January 31, 2017, or it is 8/4/2020. We're going to start our first service today with a song entitled Ivory Palaces. As Yah has done it so wondrous fine, and made their texture fill, his fragrance reached to this heart of mine, with joy of being thrilled. Out of the ivory palaces, into a world of woe, only straight ten of love made my Savior go. This life had all, so his sorrow sore, for house had a part. And when I think of the cross he bore, my eyes with teardrops start. Out of the ivory palaces, into a world of woe, only his great eternal love made my Savior go. His garments to woven cassia dip, with healing head attired. Each time I feel as I'm setting out sweat, he took me from his flood. Out of the ivory palace, a world of woe, only his great eternal love made my Savior go. In garments glorious he will come, he opened wide the door, and I shall enter my heavenly home, be blessed forevermore. Out of the ivory palace, world of woe, only his great eternal love made my Savior go. The Entering Wedge by V.T. Harder. This is a health article. It says, the genesis of diet and health. Wherefore do you spend money for that which is not bread, and your labor for that which satisfieth not? Hearken diligently unto me, and eat ye that which is good, and let your soul delight itself in fatness, and incline your ear, and come unto me, and your soul shall live, and I will make an everlasting covenant with you, even the sure mercies of David. Isaiah 55:2-3. To appreciate the importance of this divine counsel, One must first fully realize that in the beginning Yahweh created man in his own image. Male and female created he them. Yes, in Yahweh's own image were they both to live forever as he himself lives, never to experience pain or death. To eat understandingly that which is good, and to keep well, however, is to eat only that which the Creator sanctified for Elohim's, for man's use. Behold, he instructed, I have given you every herb-bearing seed which is upon the face of all the earth, and every tree in which is the fruit of a tree yielding seed unto you, it shall be for meat. Genesis 1:29. Although given an immense variety of foodstuff, every herb and every tree bearing seed, sinless, holy pair, being tempted and being inexperienced, reached for the only forbidden fruit in all of Yahweh's creation, the fruit of the tree that was in it. They became subject to that experience which was to exhibit to them and to their descendants the results of both good and evil, joy and sadness, health and disease, redemption and damnation. All these were henceforth to be the lot of humanity. Consequently, while going through this experience, death passed upon all men and upon all else that was subject unto Adam's rulership. Thus, as descendants of the fathers, Adam was naturally came unto this world as first degree sinners, subject to all the good as well as to all the evil that is in it. And now, if we choose to practice the good, we shall add no other sin, and eventually our sinful nature will be changed, and gathered by the divine light, we shall be brought to the Edenic sinless state. But if we continue to do otherwise, then as a result we shall acquire additional curses, curses which result from our own sinning, and if we never turn from pursuing such an evil course, we shall suffer even the second death. Revelation 20, verse 14. Now, the fact that early in the history of mankind, men were not subject to so much sickness, disease, and suffering as they are at the present time, and were capable of living nearly 1,000 years, proves that the nations of the day have chosen the good, but rather the evil course, the course which leads to destruction of both body and soul, thus adding sin to sin, evil to evil, and pain to pain. They are running full speed to ruin in this life, and except they repent, to find the final destruction in the life to come, to the second death, a death from which there is no resurrection. The causes of disease. The disease has been identified in three different categories: hereditary, communicative, and self-created, acquired. This being so, then there must be three kinds of sin, three laws to transgress. Two of these laws are found in the Decalogue, Exodus 20, verse 3 to 17. The first prohibits sinning against Yahweh, and the second sin against our fellow man. The third, therefore, is the law of the health, the law which forbids transgression against our bodies, Leviticus 11, Isaiah 6, 16 and 17. Plainly then, sin against Yahweh brings in its wake a hereditary curse, the kind that passes from father to son and to the third and fourth generation of them that hate me, Exodus 20, verse 5, saith Yahweh, and sin against our fellow men brings communicative diseases, shown in the fact that when Miriam sinned against her brother Moses, she was stricken with a contagious disease, leprosy, Numbers 12. However, honor thy father and thy mother, that days may be long. Exodus 20, verse 12. So whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. Galatians 6, 7. Thus it was that when Haman built the gallows upon which to hang Mordecai, he himself was hanged on them. Esther 7, 9 to 10. And when Daniel was injured, cast into the lion's den, his enemies were devoured by the hungry beast. But Daniel was spared. Daniel 6, 16, 22, 24. Moreover, when the three Hebrews' children were cast into the fiery furnace, those who carried them were consumed by the flames, but the Hebrews came out unharmed, Daniel 2, 3:21-23. See also, he that leadeth into captivity shall go into captivity. He that killeth with the sword must be killed with the sword. Revelation 13:10. It is therefore an ever-failing fact that if one molests his neighbor, or intends to do so, the harm will fall on himself. And if he harms his neighbor's children, his own children will suffer as a result. The diseases, though, which are not inherited, the sinner himself creates by sinning against his own body. Sinning against a neighbor or against oneself, nevertheless, is indirectly sinning against Yahweh also. What should everyone know? If one is suffering from a hereditary disease for which his parents, grandparents, or great-grandparents alone are guilty, he is hopelessly to do much, or he's helpless to do much of anything in the line of the complete recovery, be it by dieting or by using drugs. He may, however, be able to control the disease or even to overcome it by being strictly obedient unto the laws of Yahweh, knowing that nothing in the world will affect a cure for such illness but prayer, if Elohim's wisdom so decrees. On the other hand, if one is suffering from a disease which has been communicated unto him, or that is communicative due to one's sin against his fellow men, then to remove the disease once and forever, he must repent of his sin. Man should do to you, do ye even so unto them, Matthew 7:12. But if the disease be neither hereditary or communicative, then it must be self-created, acquired by oneself, by violating the laws of the health, by not living right in one respect or another. The wise will therefore correct their habits of living, make sure that they do not sin against Yahweh or against their fellow men, that they sleep, breathe, eat, drink, and work correctly and religiously, and if there is a cure at all, they will have it. The cause of each type of disease having now been defined, the sufferer of any of the three kinds of diseases may without difficulty determine which one of the three laws he is transgressing, and as a result, paying the penalty it imposes. If he is afflicted with the complications of the diseases, though, he must be breaking all of Yahweh's laws. Let him henceforth quit sinning in any line if he expects to recover and stay well, too. Many diseases, of course, are wrongly classed as contagious. For example, tuberculosis is not actually communicable. For when one becomes infected with a disease, he can effect a cure if, while it is yet in its early stages, he begins to live right. Obviously, then, if one always lives right, he need not fear of the disease ever getting a foothold in his body. So, in the last analysis, a number of diseases so-called contagious are not in reality such. Strictly speaking, they are infectious. brought on by oneself. And now, how fortunate should one consider himself to know that right living and right doing with faith in Yahweh actually do away with a multitude of sorrows. Summarizing the causes of all diseases, those who wonder what is the cause of this, of that, and of the other disease may quickly test every case. It is now fully understood that life and death are at war with each other, as are the nations among themselves. One nation's army may pour fire upon another, but not all of the soldiers receive the same kind of the wound, even though the whole army be under the same fire. In the like manner, the bodies of the men are the soldiers, and the cause of the disease, the enemy's mighty weapon in the warfare between heaven and earth. Hence, though some suffer from headache, some from stomachache, some from diabetes, some from anemia, from heart disease, gallstones, neuritis, or other ailment, yet all suffer for the same reason, simply because they have in one way or another moved away from their own fortress. The laws of Yahweh, this is the final diagnosis of all diseases. Stick close to the nature, and nature will stick close unto you. Lessons from the modern machine. One must realize that the human body is in some respects similar unto a man-made machine. When the gas tank of an auto goes empty, the engine immediately stops. This same law operates within the human body. When the body runs out of energy, starves, runs out of calories, it stops running, dies, and although man who made the auto can refill its tank with fuel and put it to running again, he cannot do so with the human body. Once the heart stops beating, at that very moment, life ceases and the body lies down until the resurrection day, until the one who created starts it moving again. When the crankcase of an engine becomes empty, but the engine continues running, then the machine breaks down and its usefulness ends. And as the life of an auto is maintained by reducing friction through means of lubrication, the life of a human being is kept up by the nature's replacing the worn-out cells after the day's task is done. While he takes his rest in bed, this is thus is he able to arise in the morning with renewed strength. But if he fails to provide the material which nature needs in order to rebuild the worn-out cells and tissue, he suffers the consequences, as does a neglectful person who fails to replenish the oil in his auto's crankcase. And if one fails to drink enough water, too, during the day, his blood will, as a result, become impoverished, and his system stagnant and clogged with waste material, there to ferment and decay. And if nature is deprived of energy by which to throw off the toxins through the pores, kidneys, and the bowels, or to raise fever and endure the burning process of the waste, then there is nothing to do but to give up trying disease. Let's do that last sentence again. Or to raise fever and endure the burning process of the waste, then there is nothing to do but to give up trying, decease. It is therefore necessary that nature be well supplied with all the essentials if one expects to maintain his usefulness and unimpaired and to live his allotted life. Moreover, no good engineer puts useless or needless parts into an engine, and if the user of it takes out any part, regardless how small and insignificant, the engine is made just that much less efficient. For the same is true with the human body. But though the engineer can replace the missing parts in the machine which he designed and built, The surgeon cannot replace the body organs which his patient may cause him to remove. For example, one may remove only a sit screw from a machine and not affect its performance for the time being. But at length he will find that the machine fails to perform. And if he cannot replace the part which he has taken out, the machine will become altogether useless. The same thing occurs much more or less when one removes an organ from his body. Lessons from nature. Since the well-being of the body is even more accurately taught by Mother Nature herself, no one who wishes to employ life dares overlook her counsel. Plants never do well in soil that is deficient or depleted of its life-giving property. Some plants do better in one soil or climate than do others. Some thrive in the higher altitudes and others in lower. The same law seems to operate in mankind. The darker races fare better in the torrid regions and the lighter in the frigid regions. While plant life subsists on an organic matter, animal life subsists on organic. Moreover, as plant life was created before animal life, the truth is that the plant kingdom can get along without the animal, but that the animal kingdom cannot get along without the plant. Thus it is that the vegetation needs only Mother Earth, but man needs both the earth and plant. In other words, plant life is dependent on the soil for existence, while animal life is dependent on vegetation. Flesh diet is therefore artificial and thus deficient, incapable of maintaining life. So just as plants cannot thrive on poor soil, man cannot thrive on poor diet. And if one is aware of the fact that almost immediately after the soil is enriched, the plant awakens with health and vigor, then he will have no difficulty realizing that as soon as he corrects his own diet, his health will likewise spring up. Is it not true, then, that one's health depends on the food he uses, as does the plants on the soil in which it feeds? If the sufferer's faulty diet is the cause of his ailment, and in most cases in our day it is, then no kind of amount of drug can cure him. Yet when something goes wrong with one's organism, he generally runs to a doctor, not to find and to remove the cause, but to be cured. While the cause remains and while it brings him closer and closer to the grave, and if he is not given drugs, he dislikes the doctor. Why not check up on your daily diet and habits of living? Why take drugs when you need to take water, fresh air, sunshine, the right kinds of food, or to exercise, or perhaps to clean up your home, your body, and your surroundings? Let it now be now understood that anyone living on a poor diet or in the unpleasant surroundings and unsanitary conditions is subject unto the disease in one form or another, just as is the plant that is planted in the poor soil and unconductive surroundings. Then, too, one must remember that unbalanced food, regardless of the quality or quantity, is poor food. And as too much fertilizer kills the plant, so too much food kills the man. Too much of anything is as bad as is too little. Illness, therefore, is only a warning of one's improper habits of living. But also, who can understand and who is taking heed? What else can the cause of the disease that are not hereditary or communicative be but wrong living, malnutrition, unclean flesh, food, Leviticus 11, overeating, poor elimination, insufficient exercise, lack of sunshine and fresh air, living in filth, neglecting to drink enough water between meals, or perhaps smoking or chewing tobacco, habitually using coffee, tea, or some other stimulant that whips up the body to the last ounce of energy? To be sure, Such disease as cancer are the result of wrong living. If such is not the cause of the sufferer's illness, then the last and final cause as referred to before is sin against the Decalogue. That's sin against the commandments. Nature teaches that if a tree becomes sickly from within rather than from without, then to spray it with any kind of drug will only hasten its death. Waste the drug, the time, and one's energy. The human body is no exception. If the disease is from an internal cause, then what good will it do to try to remove it by the use of drugs? In such a case, drugs will not remove the cause, but rather do greater harm and hasten the end. If it is not possible to keep a water-cooled engine from overheating when the radiator is empty, and if nothing but to fill the radiator with water will cure the trouble, then why should it be possible to cure a diseased body without curing the cause? Stop and think. True, many do suffer from hereditary and contagious diseases, but most persons suffer from diseases caused by erroneous habits of living. Alcohol beverages and other stimulants, rich pastries, commercial sweets, overeating, wrong combinations, and too many grain products. Any one of all of these collectively have more or less afflicted every human being of this age with one ailment or another. Constipation is one of the commonest diseases that one brings upon himself by erroneous eating, and constipation in itself is a cause of a number of diseases, as is malaise simulation. Man is not naturally subject to constipation. No, not any more than is a man subject to plugging up if nothing but water is put through it. For the only thing the manufacturer ever intended that should be put through it. For that commercially prepared food, too, are among the many causes of constipation. A faulty member of a certain health institute, right? Because of our civilized foods and the way they fill the bowel with toxic material and gas, it is absolutely necessary to give oneself a series of chronic irrigations at least twice a year in order to stay well. Headaches, colds, flu, intestinal pains, mucus, gas, and many disturbing disorders disappear after one or two colon treatments. We should not overlook the fact that Noah lived 900 years of good, happy life, and that we have no record of his having had to take chronic irrigations or to undergo an operation rather than resort to artificial means for cleansing now and then. Why not eat the right kinds of foods, the kinds that keep the bowels clean every day of the year? Moreover, a balanced diet will not only keep the bowels free from the toxic material and gas, but will supply the entire system with the necessary minerals and vitamins, without which no one can keep well any considerable length of time. Then why spend your money on the manufactured vitamins and devitalized foods at sky-high prices when you can have nature's own full of vitality and at prices as low as gravity? Ever remember that artificial nutritives are no better than artificial arms or legs. A time for food rather than for drugs. No one should overlook the fact that the human body is made up of certain minerals, all of which are found in foodstuff, and by these nature is well able to keep the body in perfect condition, provided that it master supplies its master supplies of the material, and provided that no monkey wrenches, so to speak, are ever dropped and to its delicate but long-enduring mechanism. Plainly then, if we fail by the food we eat, supply nature with the proper building materials, nature will consequently be unable to perform her work, and though the result of the deficiency may not be felt immediately, it will nevertheless be felt as life continues and the years go on. And if the transgressor fails to awaken and mend his ways on time, then even the most careful observance of the laws of the health will fail to repair the damage done. Obviously, one should endeavor to live right, not because he is becoming sickly, but because he is determined ever to keep well. Moreover, a machine that has been broken down and repaired is never so good as the one that has never been damaged. Neither is the man who makes himself sickly and then well. His best is never to let his health be impaired. Each one should realize that his health is his wealth, that without it all else is as good as lost, and that he can never enjoy all his Elohim-given rights and privileges if he does not carefully attend to both his physical and spiritual welfare. Drugs have their own place, but do not expect them to do that which you yourselves must do. Many are like Asa, the king. He was diseased in his feet until his disease was exceeding great. Yet in his disease he sought not to the Yahweh, but to the physician. 2 Chronicles 16:12. See Prophets and Kings, page 113. It's time for drugs rather than for food. There are diseases which attack even the healthiest and the best cared for plants. For example, when a tree that is planted in the best of soil and is well cared for becomes infested with insects or disease, and no matter what one does with the soil, he cannot thereby cause the pestilence to disappear. And if the tree is not sprayed with drugs that will exterminate the disease, the tree dies. In like manner, if one's morals, diet, and hygiene have been faultless, and still are when he takes sick, and if his ailment is not hereditary, then no matter what more he does with his diet, he will realize no hidden virtues from it. Drugs are his best remedy if prayer fails. Again, if a healthy and well cared for horse takes sick, drugs of some kind are obviously the only possible cure. Thus, if the daily living of a human being is faultless, and yet he takes sick, then outside of prayer, what can he do but resort to drugs? For example, is it not true that one starving for food that cannot be spared by taking in water, air, or something else than food? And is it not also true that one's broken and distorted arm cannot be set in place and healed right by dieting? Poulticing, messaging, or massaging, or by anything of the like? Nothing will do the trick but a competent physician to set the broken bones in place. What should a flesh eater know? No living being should overlook the fact that in the beginning Yahweh said unto the man, "Behold, I have given you every herb-bearing seed which is upon the face of all the earth, and every tree in the which is the fruit of a tree yielding seed. To you it shall be for me." Genesis 1:29. Yes, even after Adam fell in sin and was driven out of the garden after the earth brought forth thorns and thistles, his meat was still the herb. No longer that which grew in Eden, but that which grew in the open field. Genesis 3:18. It was after the flood that he was permitted to use flesh food, and although he made use of only clean animal flesh, Leviticus 8, 11, the average length of life immediately dropped under the 200-year mark. Evidently, flesh diet was permitted in order to shorten man's life, and thus the miseries brought upon him through increased sin, and also perhaps to make it possible for him to perform the typical ceremonial system. Now, though, that life is altogether too short, and the sacrifice is no longer operative. The use of the Edenic, a fleshless diet, becomes to us in our weakened condition even more urgent. Being mindful of this light, Daniel refused to defile himself with the king's meat. He requested that he and his companions be given a pole, legumes, for their daily food. And a 10-day trial proved their simple vegetable meals to be superior unto the king's meat, Daniel 1:8-20. Since we have seen that in the beginning the diet created for man's needs was flesh-free, we may with certainty conclude that health can be adequately built and far better maintained without the use of flesh. History records that when man thus lived, he was able to attain super health and vigor and to endure almost 1,000 years, and rather than dying of disease, he died of good old age. In fact, even as late as Abram. So rare was the death of the persons before the death of their parents that inspiration takes occasion to record that Haran died before his father Terah, Genesis 11:28. The ox, as we know, is able to maintain vigorous strength and perfect health on an average of 20% grain and 80% grass without the use of flesh. The elephant, on even less grain, maintains good health, gains gigantic strength, and reaches great age. On the other hand, the dog, though carnivorous, cannot maintain good health on flesh alone. Merely by instinct, he knows that he has to help himself to grain and to some grass, too. While the herbivorous animal never even tastes flesh, facts which prove that a balanced vegetarian diet is complete in itself, but that flesh diet is never complete alone. The only animal that can get by fairly well on flesh, though not altogether, is the one which eats the whole hide, hair, bones, hoofs, flesh, and all. How painful the realization that through the continued sin, man's Elohim-given intelligence concerning his body's needs has degenerated lower than that of the dumb animal. Besides these considerations, looking in the retrospection down through the ages, we see that those who were given special work, the work of the great importance, were also given special diet. Diets equal to their task. For instance, John the Baptist, the Elijah of his day, Matthew 17:11-13, 11:14, being given the great task of all the prophets before him, not to predict, but to prepare the way of Yahweh, to make the crooked straight and the rough places plain, Isaiah 40:3-4. Was a strict vegetarian, living on locust fruit and honey, Matthew 3:4, Luke 1:15. Is it not even more essential then that we who bear the Elijah's message of the day, the message just before the great and dreadful day of Yahweh, should be a strict vegetarian as was John? Moreover, the diet of the Exodus movement, the movement which came into being to exemplify a second Exodus, Isaiah 11:16, the one that is to come out of all the nations and to make up the kingdom in the latter days, Micah 4:1-2, was strictly vegetarian, and the very day it set foot in the promised land. 40 years in all, Joshua 5:6. Oh, yes. Yeah. They lusted after the fresh parts of Egypt, thinking that the restriction was due to adverse circumstances. That flesh, although very much essential, was not available in the desert. And it was then that, to their surprise, the great I Am brought the quail to them right in the camp, whereupon thousands of people died, even while the flesh of the fowl was yet between their teeth, Numbers 11:33. What a rebuke, what an example to behold. Now, knowing full well that the movement is the type of the one that is arising at this time, and that the failures of the former should be the stepping stones of the latter, 1 Corinthians 10:11, should we not be thankful and happy for having been given a better diet than that which angry beasts are still subsisting on? And should we not gladly comply with this exemplified divine request to abstain from flesh food, so that our strength and character be equal to our task? Only by so doing will we be fitting ourselves for the work and for the kingdom, where the wolf also shall dwell with the lamb, and the leopard shall lie down with the kid, and the calf and the young lion and the fattening together, and the little child shall lead them. And the cow and the bear shall feed their young ones, shall lie down together. And the lion shall eat straw like the ox, and the sucking child shall play on the hole of the ass. And the winged child shall put his hand on the cockatrice den. They shall not hurt nor destroy in all my holy mountain. For the earth shall be full of the knowledge of the Yahweh as the waters cover the sea. Isaiah 11:6-9. Should we not now, as intelligent human beings, divinely enlightened candidates for the kingdom, privileged to prepare the way for such a happy and perfect day, give up flesh food before the lions and the serpents do? What should a vegetarian know? With a reasonable variety of fresh vegetables, legumes, grains, nuts and fruits, also milk and eggs, are their equivalents. A vegetarian can easily balance his diet to supply all of his body's needs. He should therefore not neglect to include in his diet as wide as possible a variety of such foods, both cooked and raw, remembering that the latter are even more essential and more complete. If we plan wisely as search inspiration, that which is most conducive to health can be secured in almost every land. The various preparations of the rice, wheat, corn, and oats are sent abroad everywhere. Also beans, peas, and lentils. These, with the native or imported fruits, and a variety of the vegetables that grow in each locality, give an opportunity to select a dietary that is complete without the use of the flesh meats. Ministry of Healing, page 299. Ellen G. Watt. Why is it, though, that some strict vegetarians, rather than improving their health and building up resistance against disease, often suffer from malnutrition and become even more susceptible under various physical ailments than before they gave up flesh foods? Because in most cases, flesh food is discarded without supplementing the diet with a satisfactory substitute. Many have the mistaken idea that by merely increasing their intake of the protein foods, nuts, legumes, and grains, they adequately replace the deficiency. By so doing, they do not at all replace the deficiency, but instead unbalance the nutrients. Ever remember that flesh is composed of about 80% grass and 20% grain. Biological experiments unmistakably demonstrate that animals cannot thrive on whole grain protein divorced from the associated leafy plants. The health seeker must bear in mind that often the immediate result of an unbalanced diet is constipation, followed by rheumatism or arthritis, if not by only even more dreadful and destructive disease. Balance your diet and nature will take care of the rest. The truth that the substances in superior quality flesh are derived from grain and grass, approximately 20% of the former and 80% of the latter, plainly demonstrates that flesh is adequately substituted only by the proportionate use of both grain and leafy plant. Be not misled. Your body needs both grain and vegetable protein in exactly these proportions. Indeed, they are all essential, and man's constitution demands them for health and longevity. There will be neither a missing link nor a weak one in the chain of the nutrients. There is also another important lesson in the fact that just as the all-wise Creator did not bless any particular locality with all the riches of the creation, but scattered and scientifically proportioned them throughout the earth, He has likewise carefully distributed the essential bodybuilding and upkeeping materials throughout the food kingdom, has not placed them all in one plant to maintain perfect health. Therefore, be sure to make use of all the 13 types of food groups or food grouped below and give them their proper proportions in your diet. Approximately 80% of your diet should consist of the first 8 classes of food, group 1, 20% of the second 3 classes of foods, group 2, the last 2 classes of foods, group 3, are seasonings for all foods. Only Elijah restores health reform. Let's do that again. After years of unsuccessful experiments, and after spending hour after hour and year after year in digging for health, and in broadcasting their finding of finding something, but no one knows what, their perplexing subject now becomes extremely apparent. That if health reform is to be restored to its proper place, then no one but the promised Elijah the prophet, who is to appear just before the great and dreadful day of the Yahweh, and who is to restore all things. Okay, Matthew 17:11, 2TG number 7, and page 11, is obviously the only one, if any, that can possibly do it. For this very reason is this book that publishes scattered far and wide, free of charge, with the hope and prayer that it brings unification, health, and blessing among Elohim's people everywhere, that all may see eye to eye, never again to let the devil lead them to watch with suspicion, to accuse and condemn one another, but to live in peace, one respecting the knowledge and sincerity of the other, each being capable to rightly conduct his own faith in Yahweh's light and responsible to unto him alone. We implore you, brethren, to not overlook and neglect what the Word says on the subject. For one believeth that he may eat all things, another, who is weak, eateth herbs. Let not him that eateth despise him that eateth not. And let not him which eateth not judge him that eateth, for Elohim hath received him. Who art thou that judges another man's servant? Unto his own master he standeth or falleth. Yea, he shall be holden up, for Elohim is able to make him stand. Romans 14, 2-4. It should also be understood and remembered that no one diet can be prescribed for all, that everyone is somewhat differently constituted, and that one's condition demands one thing and another demands another thing. For example, one who suffers with certain stomach and bowel ailment may not be able to use whole wheat bread and coarse raw vegetables, etc. Other physical conditions make him possible eating a full meal at one time, and such a one may have to eat several times during the day, etc. No one knows this but the individual themselves. Who art thou that judgest? No Christian can, therefore, innocently take upon himself the burden of the searching for a speck in the eye of another Christian and yet be able to detect even a beam in his own eye. Judge not that ye be not judged. For with what judgment ye judge, you shall be judged, and with what measure ye meet, it shall be measured unto you again. And why beholdest thou the mote that is in thy brother's eye, but considerest not the beam that is in thine own eye? Matthew 7:1-3. Therefore is no one living who has not sinned at one time or another, and there is no one living who is absolutely free from sinning. One may sin in one thing and another in another thing. No one, therefore, can accuse another without condemning himself, for the inspiration points out that even the best are as filthy rags. But thanks be unto Yahweh that he can make us clean, and the Yahweh said unto Satan, Yahweh rebuke thee, O Satan, even the Yahweh that hath chosen Jerusalem rebuke thee. Is not this a brand plucked out of the fire? Now Joshua was clothed with a filthy garment, and stood before the angel. And he answered, spake unto those that stood before him, saying, take away the filthy garments from him. And unto him he said, behold, I have caused thy iniquity to pass from thee, and I will clothe thee with a change of raiment. And I said, let them set a fair matter upon his head. So he set a fair matter upon his head and clothed him with the garments. And the angel Yahweh stood by, Zechariah 3:2-5. The power that fires one with the zeal to spy and judge another, setting up himself for an example and demanding that others do as he does, is not the power of Yahweh, no more than the power which inspires another type of fanatics with boastful and proudful display of religion. With uncalled for prayers, amens, and hallelujahs, ever praying unto Elohim but never listening to him, not mindful of what the word says, but ever boasting of his spiritual attainment, and of so-called miracles performed through him or for him, and when thou prayest, says the Yahweh, thou shalt not be as the hypocrites are, for they love to pray standing in the synagogues and in the corners of the streets, that they may be seen of men. Verily I say unto you, they have their reward. But when you pray, use not vain repetitions as the heathen do, for they think that they shall be heard for their much speaking. Matthew 6:5-7. All such vain demonstrationists are simply a cloak under which lies something questionable. The cloak is therefore used to win the hearts and favor of their audiences, in spite of what is under it, but all their works they do for to be seen of men. They make broad their phylacteries and enlarge the borders of their garment, and love the uppermost rooms of the feast, and the chief seats in the synagogues, and greetings in the markets, and to be called of men Rabbi, Rabbi. Matthew 23:5-7. The fact that they deem it necessary to incessantly repeat words which connote good Christian attributes is in itself revealing that the act is intended to cover up something so as to remove the possibility of anyone suspecting anything. Spirit-led Christians who are in the contact with heaven know that all such are after vain glory, self-interest, and self-importance. They are therefore to be shunned, regardless how loud their prayers, amens, and hallelujahs be. For the greater the shout, the more are they to be feared. Not everyone that saith unto me, Master, Master, shall enter into the kingdom of heaven, but he that doeth the will of my Father which is in heaven. Matthew 7:21. Moreover, there are agencies throughout Christendom who stand ready to criticize everything in which they themselves have no part, from all such turn away. Commercialism brings health reform. Now, at the outset of our study, let us note that the testimonies of to the congregation and to the church by the the testimony says on the subject of the health reform. Here are the statements: our workers should use their knowledge of the laws of Yahweh, laws of the life and health. They should study from cause to effect, read the best authors on these subjects, and obey religiously that which your reason tells you in truth. Counsels on Health, page 566. And here are the conditions upon which they are made. The command to inquire from the best health authorities is a positive declaration to health seekers that Sister White's knowledge of the food values and their effects upon the human machine did not originate with her, and not with heaven, but with the best health authorities in her day. Since we therefore take the part of her writings that originated with her as inspired, we are definitely charged by heaven itself to inquire from the best health authorities in our day, as she did in her day, if we care for our health. And whatever their findings be, that is what we must believe, and their recommendation we must accept and obey, and the perfect and preference unto their recommendations of her day. For in her day, knowledge on the subject had just begun. Anything short of this, therefore, is direct violation against inspiration's appeal, as it is against the individual's health interest. The great question that now arises is not so much what she teaches on diet as it is to know who the best health authorities are and what they teach. Who are they? Certainly not those who label their products writing in professional practices, health, nature, drugless, and so on. These are not health authorities at all, and most of them are in the field to sell out of their profession or their so-called health product. Then, too, these professional, shrewd, studiously downing all popular products and profession, for they well know that the only opportunity to sell something to the public depends on making people prejudiced against and fearful of the products and professions of all others. They know that in no other way their so-called health and cure stands a chance at all. So they spend years in studying how to frighten the public from the well-known markets and professional pleasure, and how to drive them to their own so-called health shops and places of professional services. And as there are multitudes of people who are ever looking for something new and better, many thoughtlessly flock to these unapproved places where they in time discover that they have swallowed a quacks, bait, sinker, hook, and line. At last, they find themselves hanging on a fish pole, as it were, with empty pockets and with inflamed stomachs. This brings in Russ Tessis, our contact, just at the 11th hour call. Let's number 11, click on our audio archive. We're going to close now this service of the song.
"You Must Be Born Again" by Elijah David.
And rest of this, you can contact us at the 11th hour call. I'm going to close the service now with a song that I've written entitled "You Must Be Born Again." And the twilight of the day, a man, he has something on his mind. Because you couldn't do the thing that you do with such love. And time has not witnessed such miracles in here today. So tell me, Master, what must I do in order to be saved? The Oxford said, you must be born again, my friend. Of the water and the blood, defend your come all sin. And walk in heaven's light from this point on, my friend. And kiss the world after sin, a brand new song again. Twilight of the evening, this world is winding down. We need help from everyone to spread the word around. Today is for spending our keeping. Let's go before the night is coming, when man can work no more. God forsake, you must be born again, my friend. Of the water and the blood, to cleanse you from all sin. And walk in heaven's light, from this point on, my friend. In case the world had to sing a brand new song again. How is it with you today, my friends? What do you say? Do you need a closer walk with him along the narrow way? Do you need a cleansing friend, resurrection from the dead? Is this your close between me now? For here's what Yahshua said. Yahshua said, you must be born again, my friend. Of the water and the blood, defend you from all sin. And walk in heaven's light, from this morning on, my friend. And teach the world how to sing a brand new song again.